welcome to the Scotland Grows Show, the podcast partner of Scotland Grows magazine, which celebrates everything that is good in Scottish gardening, as we join gardeners around the country, picking up tips, plant recommendations and stories along the way. I'm MT O'Donnell, publisher of Scotland Grows magazine and your host for this adventure. In this episode, I chat with Michael Laurie, head gardener at Thrive Garden at Castle Douglas in Dumfries and Galloway, and head of the School of Heritage Gardening there. Thrive's wonderful garden has been created over the years by students at the National Trust for Scotland's School of Heritage Gardening, and is a fine example of landscape beauty, and we chat not only about the garden, but about the adjoining nature reserve on the wider Thrive estate. We also get to find out more about the National Trust for Scotland's Thrive Heritage Gardening Show, back for 2024 on Monday the 6th of May, with plant sales, workshops, garden talks and tours, and a craft fair throughout the day, with Thrive's own team of garden experts on hand, as well as plenty for children, including face painting and wildlife activities. This series of the Scotland Grows Show is sponsored by Roots, a subscription from National Trust for Scotland, which celebrates Scotland's flora in the form of a Roots pack sent to you every 6 weeks, containing Scottish seeds to grow at home for £6 a month. Sign up today at nts.org.uk/roots, and if you use the code GROWS24, you will receive an extra packet of seeds in your very first delivery. Michael, welcome to the Scotland Grows Show. I'm delighted to have you with us today, and we have so much to talk about with Thrive Garden and with the National Trust's School of Heritage Garden, with the show coming up, with the Nature Reserve. So I think it's going to be a very interesting episode.
Definitely. Thank you very much. I'm really honoured to be taking part in this podcast, so thank you.
It's great to have you with us. So let's dive straight in and tell us about Thrive Garden.
Thrive is actually a wonderful place down here in Dumfries and Galloway, right in the southwest of Scotland. I've now been 20 years at Thrive, and it's just a fantastic place to be and to work. Thrive itself was bequested by Major Alan Gordon back in the mid-50s. And like any other garden in the Trust, this one is actually quite unique. It's quite different. It's not historical. The garden started in the early 60s along with the school, and it's really evolved from there. Really, outside all the main buildings, the house, it's a Scottish baronial style house that Alan Gordon stayed in, and the gardens round about it was originally all fields. And when the school started in the early 60s, they developed from there, really taking a field in and designing it into a garden. But It's now grown into 64 acres of garden to be managed by ourselves to the high standards expected within the Trust.
It's quite a place, isn't it? So if visitors were to come along to the garden, it's divided into a series of smaller gardens to try and showcase different styles, and that includes a rose garden and a rockery and a walled garden. So maybe tell us a wee bit about some of the different areas, and maybe tell us which areas are your favourites.
Well, the garden itself, as you just said, it's like really a house. I always think of it as these different rooms. As you walk from one to another, there's quite a rapid transformation that you go from like the ericaceous beds into the rock garden. And you can walk really from that area straight into a woodland garden and continue on up to the island beds in front of the house. This was all designed intentionally to give the trainees that experience of working in all these different areas. You can continue up the garden, and we've got a secret garden and the garden of contemplation, relatively new, but there's the conifer beds and heather beds, and obviously more woodland walks and lots of herbaceous round about. And I think the pinnacle is really the wall garden itself, which is a fully productive working wall garden with all her soft fruits. And enclosed in that is our display house as well, that we have a cold, temperate and tropical area for all these indoor plants to grow that are managed by the trainees. But with that huge, diverse areas within the garden, it gives us a great collection of plants that are housed in these areas. And the trainees thrive from it, because 90% of our plants now are all labelled, which is great for the public as well. They love to see the plant itself with its names and everything. So, and really from our point of view, the training and the trainees benefit so much from this.
And one of the great joys of visiting gardens is to be inspired by the planting and the planting combinations. And so when something is labelled as a garden visitor, that's just fantastic, isn't it? It takes out the guesswork of it. You can actually go and try and find that plant if you want it for your garden.
That's right. And as I said, we have about, I'd say 90%, because I think when the school went through a transition back in the 90s from 16 trainees down to 6, some things were put to the side because they just couldn't quite to keep up with that. But we are now back. We're working and identifying every day, looking at new plants that has either lost its label or anything. But the public do love that aspect that they can go in and come into the garden and actually write down what the plant is and go away with that information.
And so you've talked to me a bit about the trainees. Let's kind of give a wee bit more context around that. Threave hosts the National Trust for Scotland's School of Heritage Gardening, which, as you said before, was established in 1960. And it's quite a unique setup in Scotland, isn't it, to have this heritage school of garden set within a garden and to have the trainees there learning and working every day.
It is. It's very unique. I'm very honoured, really, to take over the school now for the last 6-7 years. I've worked my way from being an instructor to a deputy head gardener to being the head gardener and now the head of the school as well. The school is fantastic what it does and grow these trainees in the year that they come here. So obviously accredited with RHS as well and their own Threave certificate. So throughout that year, it's hands-on practical. There is a bit of theory which goes along with it, such as your plant identification and plant portfolios and maintaining a diary. There's that theory that they go home at night and they've got to keep up to date with, but they're exhausted, believe me, when they're working 40 hours a week in the garden. And they are my gardeners, really. For the 1 year, we've got to get them up to speed and maintain the garden. I don't have an abundance of gardeners in the background, so myself and my team instructors really work so hard with them, just building that confidence and being out there daily with them and giving them everything that they ask for, answer all the questions as much as we can. And obviously, there's a lot of training involved with that with the course as well.
And training is rigorous, isn't it? So tell us, how many plant specimens a week do your trainees have to try and learn?
Well, we do it over a fortnightly basis. We take them out and we give them like sort of 20 plants. We theme it, like so maybe autumn colour or early spring flowering or whatever. There's always a theme. And every fortnight, we take them out within the garden and we'll walk them around, show them the plants, talk to them, give them a bit of information about them. And then the following fortnight later, they go into a plant ident, very strict conditions as well. And they'll get a little sample from that plant. And they're obviously, out of the 20, we test them on 15 and 5 from a previous ident. So they're not just learning them parrot fashion and moving on to the next 20, they have to keep up to date with their old ones as well and keep looking at them. We might put the same plant in 3 or 4 times. It could be for its bark, it could be for its flower, it could be for its autumn colour. So they have to really keep paying attention to the plants within the garden. And proud of all our trainees presently and even previously, they've always been up in the 90% marks anyway. So I think it's quite daunting, the very first one. But after that, I think they love it. By the end of the year, they say that that's always the best part of the course was the plant identification. Because I think if you build that knowledge of plants, it gives you the confidence in what you're doing anywhere else in the garden, whether it be like sort of digging a border over and lifting the plants or dividing or working in propagation. It just gives you that confidence that you need, is knowing your plants.
It's a great skill to have, isn't it, no matter what trainees go on and do?
Yeah, definitely. And even we go into maybe a little bit more with the families so they can associate different parts of a plant that they can associate that belongs to, like Rosaceae family. It gives them that confidence that if they don't know a plant, they can start breaking it down and look at the family characteristics.
And I guess the whole benefit of doing this training in a garden is that it's very practical. It's not just the theory, but the theory is taken from the garden context in which they're working.
Yeah, I'm a really strong believer, and you really learn by working out there with people and gaining that knowledge and just instruction, really, about information, all about the plant as well. And you can see how it's growing, how to prune it, how to maybe feed it if you need to. So there's a lot of information that you gain working hands-on.
And those trainees get to influence the garden at Threave, don't they?
They do. They come here and they get involved, and we'll be always looking. The garden, that's a unique thing about the garden. We can evolve. We can keep changing. Our local visitors love coming back regular just to see what we're up to. And just recently, within the last 2 or 3 weeks, we've done a lot within the garden, a lot of changes as well. So we've had one or two comments already. That's what they'll have to come back and see, that we can do this. And the trainees get involved with that. We'll look at beds, and each year we'll take up a bed and we'll look at replanting it. And I always like to create a story behind, like, sort of why we do a bed, whether it be a theme of colours, whether it be a theme of a group of plants, just something that it really creates a story, which I think is important in a garden like this.
It's amazing that each new wave of trainees through the programme get to feel that, you know, their opinions are valued and their design ideas are valued, and they can actually get to the stage of not just maintaining, but planting up an area.
Yeah, they get to see it from start to finish, which is really important in anybody's development, and being able to be involved and having ideas. And it really, sometimes it really lifts us as well, because if not something we wouldn't have thought about, and they maybe bring an idea from somewhere we've been previously. So as an instructor, head gardener, we're always learning as well. You never stop learning in horticulture. There's so much out there that you gain this information, whether it be through the trainees or working with other people. But their ideas and their involvement is really regarded highly by us all.
It must be a great joy to work with the next generation of gardeners.
It is. And as I said, I've been here 20 years, and from the trainees, from previous years gone past, and working with these and seeing where they've flourished really and went on to. So I always think of sorry about the pun, but from a small oak seedling, an acorn grows a mighty oak. So it's true that you see them, some has really went on from Threave and really done well.
What's the makeup then of those fallen certificate who come straight from school to those who are maybe looking to change careers a little bit later on in life?
Well, really, even coming from school, we look for them maybe to go into college and doing a basic national certificate in horticulture. And then we have people who's maybe changing career. And we try and advise them either to go and work for 6 months at least in a garden, volunteering to get a feel for it, or to go and get a HNC, a national certificate of some sort, because our course, we look at it as more or less like a diploma level course. It's really intense. We're not going to fool anybody out there and say that it's really easy. It's not. There's a lot involved in the course. And RHS level 2 is quite demanding as well, at what we do. And as I said earlier, we've got the 3 certificate. It runs alongside that to really complement it.
So if anyone listening was interested in starting a career in horticulture, no matter what age or stage they're at, what would be the best advice that you would give them? Would it be to go out and get some voluntary experience, first of all, in the industry?
That's the best bit of advice I could give anybody, is just go out there and work with a professional or somebody that's really horticultural minded. You can learn and get so much from that person. I know when I started off, I worked for myself, my own business, and a few of the private gardens. There was a gardener who was retired, and I worked alongside with that person, and the knowledge and information and just the excitement of what you're learning, I think, can be so fantastic. It's definitely the way forward, I would say. If you can go out there and volunteer, try and get into somewhere local, but just getting the feel of gardening, it's, and just being outdoors, it's fantastic.
And that's important, work out whether you like being outdoors in all seasons and all weathers, all times of the day.
It is. And I think sometimes people get maybe the wrong aspect about gardening. We are working here with waterproofs all the time, that our trainees are issued with waterproofs, and we have to make the most of the weather with the climate changing and that, and we're getting a lot more rain. So it's a shock, I think, for some trainees when they first come. But after a few weeks of working in the rain, they soon adapt. And we always say that they leave here with webbed feet. So it's a great job just being outside all the time.
And there has to be a realisation if you want to be a gardener in Scotland, you're going to have to put up with four seasons in one day.
certainly, that we can get it all. We can have the snow and rain and wind. And so, yeah, it's just managing that. And wherever you go, it's going to be part of it as well, that we can't just go in. I think a lot of people think we would run inside it these type of days. But no, we're out there. We have to get on with the tasks, keep the garden going. We learned that through COVID as well. Nothing sits still in the garden. You can't just walk away from it. It's still going. It's still living. So there's a lot always to do. I'm lucky here. I've got a fantastic team. It's a small team that I've got. Nothing like some of the big gardens like Killeen and that. But I've got a deputy who is one of the instructors, and I've got a coordinator who runs the school. So there's a team of 5 years that actually run it all. And it's a hard thing to balance as well. That people look at other gardens and the trust. We've got a school and a garden to keep, and keeping up to date with the training is a lot of work. And from a team, and I really credit them with how they manage it all. The fantastic group. So I'm lucky. I've got a job like this, and I've got a good support. And I love the National Trust in Scotland. A fantastic organisation to work for.
And every National Trust gardener and manager that I've talked to and interviewed for the podcast have all said exactly the same thing.
I've come from having my own business with like 5 employees and giving all that up to come to the trust. I'm really honoured to be.
And you're making a difference to the landscape of Scotland and the heritage and just conservation.
It's so much within the trust. We're all the head gardeners and the advisors. You're just one big team.
As well as the teaching that goes on in the garden and maintaining the garden and doing all that, there's also the wider Threave estate, which goes on to encompass a nature reserve. And that's home to a diverse wildlife population as well. So that's another reason, isn't it, to come and visit Threave, because you're seeing more than just a garden.
The estate itself is 1,500 acres out there in the nature reserve, and it's a fantastic really day that you can spend between the two anyway. But the nature reserve itself, we've got Threave Castle on the island down there, which is really symbolic when you're walking down there. But the nature that you can see, I go down often and walk the dog in the evening. It's such a peaceful place to be as well. And you've got different times of the year. You've got the grey lags coming in and the pink-footed geese as well. Otters I often see when I walk down. The kingfisher as well is another one of my favourites. I just love that metallic, that from really the roe deer. And then you've got the osprey, which will be arriving soon. A lot of people come just to see the ospreys on the nature reserve. But my colleague Dave Thompson is actually the manager of the estate. It's this 100-year project he's undertaken, and it's fantastic when you see that it's taken an intensifying dairy farm, letting it go back to nature, and the putting native plantings in there with the trees, and how that already within 2 or 3 years has really flourished is absolutely fantastic.
It's just an entirely wonderful place to come and visit.
It's a myriad of wildlife that you see down there. You cannot go down there and not see wildlife. It is all around about you. You just have to look. And with the new walkways and everything that they've put down around the estate, new pathways, all ability access, and the interpretation, everything, it's well worth a visit going down.
Great place for families to come and for children to actually get up close and personal with nature.
It is. And even more so now, I think nature is really the well-being factor, really, to be out there and into these spaces. And it's right on our doorstep and you can access it at all times. So I would recommend it to anybody to come to the garden, but also come to the reserve as well. The nature reserve is a fantastic experience.
So visitors to the garden can see everything that you've talked about in the garden. They can meet the trainees. They can also visit the nature reserve on their visit to Threave. And I know that the 6th of May would be a very good time to visit Threave, as you're hosting a garden show that day.
It is, yeah. And that's a bank holiday purposely organised for that. We hosted it last year and we had fantastic weather for the 6th of May last year. And the crowds were amazing, the people that came. This year we've grown even more, stallholders, more crafts, more nurseries are really coming in, and we've been publicising it everywhere. So we're really in for a special day. I think the biggest problem for us is parking, but we've got a field at the bottom of three that we can adapt to allow this. But it's a fantastic day out. We're going to have lots of things to do for children. Children, by the way, are free to get in with the parents, and we've done a reduced rate of £5 per adult to come into the garden. And there's going to be guest talks. Colin Wren is going to be giving a talk. We've got like some demonstrations and tours in the wall garden. We've got these stalls. It's round about the garden with all different crafts. We've got a few marquees up. So there's going to be something for everyone. And we're going to look to grow it the years to come, really, because we're trying to attract all horticulture-related things back into Dumfries and Galloway. And I think it's a Thrieve is an ideal situation, place to do this for everybody. So come and enjoy your day out at Thrieve on the 6th of May. It's going to be fantastic.
I'm looking forward to it. I will be there and looking forward to having a wider look around as well.
Good. It'd be really good to see you there, and you'll enjoy the day. The only thing, we keep our fingers crossed, we can't mention the word. We don't talk about the word rain, the weather.
No.
With my team and that. If we have the day that we had last year, it was fantastic. It was really good. We had a lot of entertainment going on as well. So it lasted a full day. You can spend walking around. You get to see the garden as well. You be able to have a talk with the gardeners. It's going to be one of our team in a stall giving answers and questions. So bring your questions in, come and see us, speak to us. We've got lots of things to do for kids as well, face painting, climbing frames, lots of things for them to do.
And at the end of the day, if it rains, we're gardeners, we just don our wellies.
That's what I say. We've just got to, we can't complain. I think that's 5 years now, and a time when we've held it that time, it's been fantastic weather. So hopefully we will not, but if we need to, we have some spreader umbrellas up at the visitor centre. So
Scotland Grows will be there, and I'm sharing a tent with the Cali because I sit on the board of the Cali, so we'll be there as well and looking forward to talking to everyone.
Well, that's great. It's going to be a really good day for us all.
So when you ever get out of Thrieve, Michael, if you ever do get out of Thrieve, do you have other favourite National Trust for Scotland gardens that you love to visit?
Yeah, I have. I've got quite a few. Close by me is one of my favourites, is Broughton, Overseas Broughton as well, which is Mike, who's my first gardener down there. I enjoy going down to see him regular, and the garden is fantastic. It's a Hornell, one of the Glasgow boys inspired, a Japanese-inspired garden, and it's a smaller garden, but it's just fantastic. Really recommend it to anybody. It's hidden away. It's one of the gems within the trust, I always say, and the intensity of it as you walk around Broughton is fantastic. So that's definitely one. Another one I like is, been to a few times, is Pitmaiden. I think Pitmaiden's great, just for that formalness, the way it's constructed, and obviously with the Crispian show, planting them that. I haven't been back to see that, but I've seen lots about it, but I'm definitely going to be going up. I think it's this May, June time I'm going up that way, so I'm going to go into Pitmaiden and see. Probably saving the best till last is Inverurie. Just blows me away. I think Inverurie, absolutely fantastic location when you arrive there and you see the wall garden encompassed by the shore, the water, and the way that the wall garden just sits and faces. It's absolutely fantastic. It's got everything. I could go on for ages with other gardens, but within the trust, and I'm sorry if my colleagues are listening out there, but they're all fantastic. The gardens are really well managed, well kept.
Yeah. You've now just lost friends within the trust because you didn't mention their gardens.
I'll get an email next week to say that.
We had Maddie Geddes-Barton on the podcast previously from, she's a woodland gardener at Inverurie, and she almost went into a different zone when she was talking about the garden. It was a fascinating discussion. And like you say, just the setting of it. And Maddie talked a lot about storm events and when they've had to fell trees and how that's opened up spaces. And, you know, a lot of the good work they're doing there in Inverurie, looking towards the health and the future of the planet as well. So it was really, really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. The trust in general, really the beliefs that they're creating within the team. And one of the things is we're always looking at a climate, a change and how we're adapting to that. And sustainability is a big thing as well within the trust. So we're all doing our bit. We all have to really look at it as an opportunity. When a tree comes down, I've had quite a few storm damaged trees and floodings and things. So I think you've just got to be positive constantly and not looking back and just planning. I always keep saying when I plant something, I'm planting for the future. I'm trying to be like 50, 100 years ahead, thinking ahead. Will this be here then? And this climate, will it be able to survive? These are things that I'm always very conscious of. So hey, it's a challenge.
I saw a little meme on social media yesterday, and it was just a kind of cartoon picture of a lady planting a tree. But the caption was, "You can thank me, grandchildren." You know, so it was kind of this idea that we're planting for the future, not just for how it looks just now.
I think that's really the important. It's for the future, not just go for something short term of that. And I know with my advisor, the gardens here, that we are constantly looking 50 years down and what we're planting now for at least 50 years time. And people are amazed when you say that. But as custodians of our gardens, we've got to be able to do that to make sure that what we've created will be here for others to enjoy in years to come.
Actually, the caption said, "You're welcome, grandchildren." I knew I hadn't got that right. "You're welcome, grandchildren." That's what it said. But it was the same sentiment we're planting for the future. So when you're not visiting NTS Gardens or teaching at Threave or maintaining the gardens or doing everything that you're doing there, what's your own garden like, Michael? Do you actually get time in your own garden?
Just recently, I've actually moved. In the last 2-3 years, I've just moved there. Closer to Threave, I was about 40, 50 minutes away. And the garden I had then was about probably over an acre. And enthusiasm over the years just kept developing the garden, kept developing it, and spent most of my evenings and time when I wasn't out working in the garden. So when I moved, one of my choices was to look for a simpler maintained garden. And I don't know if it was fortunate or not, but my wife loved the house and I was just looking at the garden. And it was a smaller garden, but it's all bought paved and slabbed round about. So my first thing was to lift a lot of these paving slabs and create different plantings. But mostly what I've done, because just like a different challenge, I've really got everything in containers so I can move around the garden and put them into positions. You can brighten up a corner, it's just amazing. Just with containers are just fine with that luxury. If you see something that's looking well, you want to bring it around to a place where you're sitting and enjoying. So I've really made it a garden that I can enjoy more, be hands-on, and really build my collection of plants up. Not to my wife's place anyway, but she's loving it as well, just being out there and seeing how within 2-3 years, the garden's totally changed. I've got my greenhouse now and a lot of plants really just all over the place. It's somewhere that I can just go in and I can sit down within the garden and just take it all in and just seeing things actually develop and grow, which is fantastic as well. And if someone outgrows a container, I always find a space for it around about the garden somewhere.
And it's nice to sit with a new garden for a while, isn't it, to get a sense of the space. And container gardening is a different type of gardening, but...
Yeah, I've certainly learned over the years that previously if I got a plant, I just put it in somewhere. And it was only when it started to get a reasonable size, I thought I'd better move that. So now with a container, what I find is I can move it around the garden to maybe a location and I can think, right, if I lift a few paving slabs there, that looks actually really nice. It blocks off this and it gives us a lovely colour. So I do like looking out the windows in the house and just having a bit of colour. Winter colour is something that really pushes me on. I just love to see a lot of colour in the winter time.
That's important because so many people look out on a barren landscape in winter and just... wish the time away until it was springtime again, but actually you can do so many things in a winter garden.
I do. I love it just looking out, and presently I've got some nice dogwoods out in the garden, the cornices. They were in a container, but I found an ideal place for them now. And just the way that sunlight hits them when the frost is on them, and you look out and you just see the red and yellows tinges, and I've got the orange ones as well. So it's just getting, I think that's a wee thing I've definitely learned, keep moving the plant around to where you think it's best situated and what you want to see as well.
So now I'm going to have to put you on the spot, Michael. But if you could only have three plants in your garden, which plants would they be and why would you choose them?
It's a really hard one for mine's my plant's choice, favorite, everything changes from week to week. But there is definitely one that I would start with, and that is I absolutely adore hollies, the ilex. I think I just got hooked at three of those. When I first started, we've seen these hollies all over the place and they weren't identified. They'd lost their labels. So one of my tasks to start with was to start identifying them. And it made me really appreciate hollies. Everybody's got this Christmas picture in their head with the variegation and a few red berries, but it's so vast that I didn't realize this. From really, really small leaves from the Granata to the big Dipriena, which is like a lovely dark black with black berries. And the variegation on them as well is so vast. There's even one, the deciduous one, which is fantastic. It's a really good talking point within the garden. But I think they're easily maintained. So in my garden, they'd be great. It wouldn't take up a lot of my time. The colour throughout the winter is fantastic. You've got the berries. You've got the shapes, the forms of them. And people don't really look at them closely enough. But within the next few weeks, the flowers on them are absolutely stunning. So definitely holly, I would definitely have. The other one I like, I think it just cheers me up, is dahlias. There's just so many forms of the dahlias. And one of them that we haven't here is Bishop of Llandaff. But there's a lot of the different Bishop ones that I've been managing to collect myself. And I've got a lot of them in containers. And they just keep going on and on and on throughout, right into the hard winters. And obviously we lift them and store them. But I just find them coming back every year and the foliage colour is just fantastic and so reliable continuing on. Probably, definitely, my final one is obviously the Narcissus and daffodils. My father, I started off in the likes of early age, my dad always referred to them as the lilies. Look at the lilies outside in the garden, they're looking great. Every year we look for these lilies coming up. And then when I come to three, I thought, this is amazing. Then the collection we've got here, I think we're second to Brodie, really, with daffodil collection here at three from Alan Gordon's time as well. It's fantastic collection. What blew me away was the daffodil bank in early April. When you come and see that, the Southern Jane just absolutely covers the whole of the daffodil bank. But the variation, even looking out today, I've seen the tete-a-tete out and the little cycliminis one, like, it's got a head like I always think it is Bart Simpson with the reflex petals back in it, and it's tiny little ones. So there's a big variation. And yeah, the daffodils, or should I say the lilies, would definitely be in my garden this time of year. I think it cheers you up. Summer's not far away, gardening's started, but it kicks everything off.
Well, that would be a nice garden to sit in because you would have evergreen structure all round. You would have a blast of spring colour. And then going into the autumn, you'd have this just lovely blast of colour from all the dahlias.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's colour attracts me with plants, really. The foliage is a big thing to me. And also, I think the dahlias, the Bishop of Llandaff, I love that because it's coppery colour. And I think without the flowers, it'd still be graceful in its own right.
And when you said that you lift all your dahlias, so even though they're in containers, are you still lifting them from the containers or are you just putting the whole container in a greenhouse or a sheltered position?
No, we actually lift all our dahlias and we allow them to dry out for a few weeks. I turn them upside down, cut them back, leave 2 or 3 inches stubble on them and turn them upside down and just dry them in a shed somewhere and then give them a bit of storage, put them away for the winter and maybe put some straw over the top of them, some protection. And then we'll take them out, we'll just gently introduce a little spray of water and put them into some compost and you'll see the new shoot. And it's a great time to take cuttings from the new shoots as well. And you can double your stock up quite easily.
Well, I was a very lazy gardener towards the end of last year, Michael, and I will let you know how my experiment goes. But I do like to experiment in the garden as well. So I lifted a lot of dahlias, put them away, but I had some in containers and I've left them in the containers and just put a mulch on top of the containers. Not very hopeful that they will survive because it's been so wet this winter. But as I say, I like to experiment and, you know, against the shelter of a wall, I literally didn't put them inside or anywhere because it's always good to be able to try things out and share with other gardeners what works and what doesn't work. So I'm not very hopeful, but...
Fingers crossed. I think the big thing with us as well, we seem to sit in a frost pocket down here, and we get a lot of rain. The two combined together, the wetness, the rain, and then we get frost. We've lost them in years gone past with that, so we've learned the hard way. And I think as gardeners, that's what we do. We just pick ourselves back up and keep going. And if we can pass it on, we'll pass it on. But you might find where you're located, you could be fine. You can maybe get away with it. But fingers crossed, I hope you do.
Yeah, I know. I shouldn't be telling the head gardener at Thrive that that's what I did with my dahlias this year. But maybe I'll be able to come back to you in a couple of months' time and tell you that they're blooming and they survived. That would be the hope.
It'd be fantastic. Maybe in May you can tell me if they've passed away, but you can do that.
And if not, we'll start all over again and it'll be fine. So just to finish, Michael, obviously you're teaching and you're helping grow gardeners all day, every day, but what would be the best piece of advice then that you would give to new gardeners?
And keep asking questions. I think that's what we encourage the trainees. They come here in the first few weeks, very shy, holding back. But I just keep saying to them, keep asking questions. It's the only way you're going to learn. And make sure that you absorb, give it everything when you go into it to horticulture. Write as much down, record as much as you can, and just absorb all that information around about you, these professionals around about you, and just take it in and listen and practice. Go out there and practice again and again and again till you feel that you've got it right, and enjoy. I always say that my team here are fantastic, and the ethos is to get up every morning, look forward to what you're doing, and enjoy that really in the spirit of being outside, being in a team, achieving something. It's just enjoy your job. You're lucky. Everybody tells us, oh, you're lucky out in this. I'm sat in an office. Well, I think we don't appreciate that enough, and we should be looking at it from that aspect. And we're out there with nature, well-being. It's a fantastic area to be in.
And that's a lovely way to finish as well, just encouraging people to enjoy their garden space, because so often we can look at it like another task or another job to be done or another area to be maintained.
Yeah. Have a sit down and just take it all in and appreciate what you're doing and just enjoy it. That's what I would say.
I always very much try to tell people that as well. Go out and overtake the gardening work on the days that are not so nice. So on the days that are nice, you can just sit down and enjoy your work.
Yeah. And we all make mistakes, but it's how we get up from these and keep looking forward and just keep moving on. And it'll come right in the end.
And plants are resilient at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Plants want to thrive and survive no matter what we do. And sometimes in spite of what we do.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I better let you get back to it then. Michael, thank you so very much for your time this afternoon and for being such a fabulous guest on the Scotland Grow Show. And I look forward to seeing you on the 6th of May at the Garden Show at Thrive.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really honoured, as I said, of taking part in this. So thank you. Thank you to everybody that's listening.
Great. Thanks, Michael. See you soon.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Scotland Grow Show. Don't forget to follow us on social media by searching for Scotland Grows across Facebook, Instagram or LinkedIn, and sign up for our mailing list at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com so you never miss an episode of the Scotland Grows Show. And if you're not yet subscribed to receive Scotland Grows Magazine 6 times a year, straight to your inbox, literally packed with Scottish gardening goodness, then be sure to do so as soon as possible, and you'll even get access to all the back issues. Details can be found on our website at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com, across our social media feeds, and in the show notes for this episode. The information on National Trust for Scotland's Roots subscription is also in the show notes, and they would appreciate your support to help National Trust for Scotland's gardens and design landscapes thrive. I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the Scotland Grow Show as we celebrate Scottish gardening.